Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. And I am joined by Sharon Virts, who is the author of the brand new work of historical fiction. This is called The Grays of Truth. It is available everywhere. And Sharon, I'm always amazed when writers use historical fiction genre because it takes us out of the time and place that we're so used to reading the current mysteries. And so I guess it's a chicken or egg question. When you set about to write the story, what comes first for you? The story, the time period, the setting? How does that work on your writing process?
Well, typically, I tend to gravitate toward the 19th century. So that is sort of a limiting factor in general. I just have done a lot of research in that area, and I'm familiar with it, and I just love a lot of things about it. But usually it's the story. I've got to find the real-life story that has all the elements that I think, or at least part most of the elements I think that can really contribute to writing a great fiction. It's got to have, you know, a little death and mayhem. That's always important. Some really, you know, unstable or unsavory characters. There has to be a hero that's present. You know, someone that has really had their own personal journey as part of this experience that they've lived through. So those are some of the factors I like to look for. And then I can create that drama around an event and fictionalize it. So, and these are not necessarily events that, you know, that one would remember in history, but yet they're embedded in a time period of history that we tend to want to know more about. So it allows me to weave those historical elements as part of the fabric of the background of what folks that day in that day and time would be talking about. So, for example, you and I might be talking about an election. We might be talking about, a war someplace. They would be doing the same thing in their lives. So it allows me to weave that period of time into the drama that I'm creating for readers. And I just love, you know, that aspect of it.
In this particular book, it's set in Reconstruction era Baltimore, so you've got the Civil War in the chronologically in the past, but you've still got the idea of a family, and so I mean those dynamics. It was a nuclear family, but those dynamics change over the years. So setting it down when the story sets out, how do you capture the moment, like you say, of what they were talking about? Because it seems like you can't go out today and somebody doesn't mention Trump-Harris, or somebody doesn't mention, you know, if it's football season, the football teams. People were more concerned about more important things, it seems like, back then.
Yeah, so for instance, in this particular story, what really sort of set it off is that it's set in Baltimore, but it's also set in Washington, D.C. And those cities were quite close back then. The train now was relatively new. In the last few decades, was connecting those two cities, and there's a lot of back and forth in between them. And if you remember, in the war, Washington, D.C. was, you know, much, much closer to Virginia, and a lot of folks from Virginia fled to Washington, D.C. during the Civil War, and Baltimore was part of the Union. So you had that, you know, very close relationship between the two cities. And so, for example, I found out that my protagonist lived literally next door to Edwin Stanton. And Edward Stanton was the war secretary during the Civil War and still was part of the Johnson administration after the Lincoln assassination. I also found out that Dr. Joseph Barnes, who was the surgeon that was attending Lincoln during his assassination after he'd been shot, ended up being the Surgeon General of the Army, which is kind of like our Surgeon General today. And he was trained by the protagonist's father at the College of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. So those things sort of said, oh, okay, there's going to be a lot of talk in this family about Lincoln's assassination, Johnson's presidency, the impeachment of Johnson, the trial that subsequently happened, when Stanton, you know, barricaded himself in those offices, when Johnson was trying to fire him and Congress was saying, no, you can't. So those things would have been, you know, pretty front and center for that particular family based on where protagonist lived and the family's history that touched upon some of those points of history.
And then I noticed as the writing, you know, you're using words that people don't use anymore. I saw the word "twas" in there a few times, and as in the contraction for "it was." And so to get that into your beat in your writing as you're writing the dialogue, people had different dialogue back then, and we are so used to texting and, you know, IMH, BRB, those types of things. But when you have to go and do this from a historical perspective, how do you get yourself in the mindset out of 2024 and back into that mindset to speak as one would have spoken back then?
I do a couple things. Number one, I spend a lot of time reading those old newspapers, and they're not indexed or anything, so you have to just sort of work your way through a lot of that. So, you know, when you read the newspapers, you read the advertisements that people place, letters to the editor kind of, you know, pieces in those papers, you really do get a sense of the dialogue. Now, if I had gone full on the way they talked back then, you probably wouldn't be able to understand it as a reader. So I was very selective in choosing some of the dialogue elements, some of the vocabulary when I wrote, because it would be, they used way too many, you know, verbs in a sentence. I mean, sometimes I go through, what do you say again? So I do read a lot of newspapers. I also try to watch some streaming type films as well to get a sense of some of it. You know, I recently watched Manhunt, because in Manhunt, it's the story of the hunt for Booth after, John Wilkes Booth after the assassination, and Stanton and others were in there. And so just to get a sense of some of the accents and dialogues, if they do it in the films, and sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. I watch a lot of BritBox, too. The British folks still have a lot of those, they still use a lot of those sort of, you know, sort of speak, even today. And so, but trying to put your head back there really, truly is an exercise. And then what I'll do is I play it in my head. How might it play as a movie if when I'm writing that particular scene? You know, and then we have to make it modern enough so that I can grab on to younger readers. I have a lot of readers, believe it or not, who are the Gen Zs. I'm shocked by it. But they love the fact that many of these folks that are in my stories are wealthy. And so they like some of the way in which they lived as well as, you know, actually what happened. But it takes some effort.
I'm talking with Sharon Virts about her brand new novel, The Grays of Truth. It's historical fiction. It is available everywhere. It's set in the Reconstruction era in the eastern part of the United States, Baltimore and Washington, D.C. Sharon, the actual story itself, I know that it was based on, or at least inspired by, some true events, but when you take these and try to fictionalize them, how true do you try to stay to the story, to the original story, or is that even a factor as you're doing your creative writing version of it?
It is a factor, Brian, and it's important, in my mind, to stay true to the spirit of the story. This book, this is my third historical fiction, and this one in particular steers further away from the actual events than the other two, because I'm getting my chops, as they would say. I'm getting more brave. So I don't want to compromise the story and the people who lived through it that much. So, but in this particular case, I didn't have a clear protagonist, and so I used two individuals to create one, and I merged her into the Jane Grey Wharton character. And I wanted to make readers truly feel the way I felt when I learned about how a number of these folks in the Wharton family had died. And the only way to do that, in my mind, is to build a love for a character, or the love for the people, the victims, through the eyes of others that are telling the story. And so to do that, I had to create this protagonist who was a real person, but she is a composite of a couple of people, so she's truly fictional. And so, but staying true to that spirit of the story, so that, you know, we know what actually happened, and as I always say, when you really read some of this, the true life events, it is stranger than fiction oftentimes. I mean, I read it and I go, there's no way. And I'll get into arguments with people about, did they really do that? Yeah, they really did that. And sometimes, you know, it's just hard to believe. And sometimes I have to actually doctor the forensics a little bit, because if I make them true to what was actually talked about, we've watched too much CSI in our world, so there's no way that a jury would have thought that she had given somebody, you know, 15 grams of arsenic as an example, and they didn't convict the person. What, in fact, you know, they didn't in another story I wrote. But the point being is that you've got to almost modernize it a little bit in order for people to make it believable to a modern day reader.
It seems like you can't have a crime fiction story set in Baltimore in that area and set in that era, historical fiction or not, without Edgar Allan Poe, and you have some Poe quotes interspersed throughout the book in some of the section headings. And so is he a bit of a muse for a story like this, because he really was the father of these crime fiction type books?
Yes, and you know what's even cooler about this is that one of the characters in the book is General Scott Ketchum, and he is based on the real-life General William Scott Ketchum. And both Poe and General Ketchum were at West Point Academy at the same time in 1831. So I found, when I saw that, I thought, ooh. Okay, so he actually knew him. He's in the story. The story set in Baltimore. It has these dark undertones of poison. I've got a very unreliable narrator in Jane Grey, Wharton, and, you know, Poe's Montresor in Cask of Amontillado. Tiago is and the narrator in Telltale Heart were very, you know, unstable. So all those factors sort of led me to include Poe. He's a reference in there, and his writings that introduced each heading, each major section, I just thought was just too irresistible not to include.
Well, and Poe's death itself is still a mystery, right?
Correct. I mean, was he poisoned? Was he murdered? Did he just drink himself to death? There's a lot of sort of what's not known about how he actually passed. And his writings were, at the time, very dark. And, to be a huge fan, as I created one of the characters to be, is I think, kind of interesting as well.
I know that you've made this now your part of your life. You have several aspects of it, but with the historical writing, is there, like there is with the contemporary crime fiction, it seems like there's a fraternity or sorority of writers, and they do that. Are the historical fiction people writers in their own category, and do you bounce ideas off each other? How does that work in that genre?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I started a book club about 4 years ago, right before COVID. It's a virtual one that we only read per release historical fiction. And through that, I have met a ton of historical fiction authors. And yeah, we all kind of do know each other. Not all, but you do know each other. And I get a chance to talk with them, different ones, monthly in my meetings. And what I find interesting is, they'll have read my book, and they'll say, yeah, Sharon, like in your book, when you did X, I did Y, or did the same thing, X here. And so I'm not really using them to bounce ideas off so much, at least I haven't. But I do like the fact that we do sort of collaborate have a camaraderie and a communication with one another. And my list, this past book, for example, Amanda Scannendore is a historical fiction author, and she read the ARC and did a review for me. But in her reading of the ARC, she found two things that I had missed and that my development editors had missed. One of them had to do with the 15th Amendment and when it was passed. And another one had to do with typhus and typhoid fever. Typhus and typhoid fever are two different things. But back then, they were considered the same thing. And so she pointed that out to me, and I had neglected, because she's a nurse before she became a writer. So I find that we can help one another. And the forensics and the medicine in that time period is way different than anything we experience today. Thank goodness we have modern medicine, is all I can say.
Well, it was just a fascinating story, and having it set in that era was so interesting to me to read. The book is The Grays of Truth. It's by Sharon Virts. The book is available now everywhere. Sharon, just a fantastic book. I love the story. I love the setting and the ways you describe the place and the dialogue, everything about it, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Brian, and I'm so glad you enjoyed it. It's just been a pleasure talking with you today.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.